Well, hello once again, and welcome to the Vox Pop. You know, former Governor Mario Cuomo was a lot of things to a lot of people. Father and mentor to current Governor Andrew Cuomo, political inspiration to many in his Democratic Party, a treasured colleague to those he worked with in law and government, and a very, very familiar voice right here on WAMC. We're remembering him today as he's laid to rest in New York. We brought you live coverage of his funeral earlier. What do you remember most about Mario Cuomo? His years as governor, his impassioned and influential speech at the 1984 Democratic National Convention, or his many conversations with me here on our very own WAMC airwaves? Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. And you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or the way I would do it if I were you is email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, what do you think? You know, I mean, there are so many memories that are going through my mind. The day that he said that he wouldn't come over, he was holed up, he had lost the election, he didn't think he was going to lose. And he was in the mansion, he was an Albanian, he was living there. And the wonderful Roselle told me he's coming in to do the show, and it was in the middle of a fund drive. And I said, he's not. He told us that he wasn't. She said, well, I'm coming over because I know he's coming. And as usual, she was right. And 15 minutes before he was scheduled to come over to do it on the phone, we got a call and he was on his way. And he came in and there were 19 volunteers and lots of staff. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Everybody was sort of weeping And he came in and he looked around the room and he said, what's the matter with you? You think I'm Alphonse D'Amato? I'll never forget that. And then he sat down and we did the show. We called it the Valedictory Show. And we had a conversation. And I know that we have, Zach, somewhere in there, the beginning of that show. Jessica, you showed me, you know, at the beginning about his brother Frank and the children and his child, and I asked them a question. See, I asked them a question. I said, "Are you despondent about this? Are you depressed about this?" And he answered, "Can we play that?"
The lovely Roselle, who is sitting right over there, as a matter of fact, picked these wedding bands out. They cost $8 on McDougal Street, Governor.
Excuse me, I don't want the story of your life. I asked a very simple question. Yeah. Why is it silver? Mine is gold, as you can see. Why is yours silver?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Roselle. She'd have to come over here and tell you.
Can I tell you something? I don't want to start trouble. Silver is cheaper.
I just said $8.
$8.
$8. And see these little strands between them? Uh-huh. That meant that we should be together. But there should be plenty of breathing room between us.
Uh-huh. A modern marriage. Yeah, very
not
nice.
That modern.
No. You notice mine, no strand?
Well, it wasn't what I meant to play for you, but it just showed the incredible humor of the man. He was great. And I know that Jessica is going to go in and get the list that she wrote out for me. But in the meantime, we do have what I wanted. Let's have it now. We're waiting for 1 minute. We're in the bowels of the engineering department. We see it. We can image it, and we're gonna do it. Okay, got it, Jack. Okay, let's try it this time. Go ahead.
Is it conceivable we're in hell here?
Oh, sure. A lot of us are. A lot of us are in temporary hell. It's when you can't figure it out. I think about my brother a lot because he's not well now, but he. He lost his son, my brother and sister-in-law, age 5, froze to death in the backyard, fell through the ice in a canal in Copenhagen, and was found holding on to the rope that came off the that was attached to where the boat was hooked up, with his eyes open, 5 years old. I remember the second day talking to my brother about that. He was not particularly devout. He's a Roman Catholic, and he's my older brother. Frankie, how do you handle this? And he was very profound about it. He said, look, either there is a significance or there is not. If there is no significance, then how do I avoid jumping off the bridge? You know, how do I avoid, you know, ending my own life? So there must be a significance that I don't understand and that I have to search for. This must mean something. There must be a point to it all. And I choose to believe that because I have other children and my wife and other obligations in life. So in order to sustain myself and to go forward, I will believe there is a significance that I have to ferret out of this morass. And that's what he's done, and he's done very nicely. A lot of people live that way. You know, choosing to believe. That's the essence of Christian faith.
That was Mario Cuomo at his very best. And I'll never forget that conversation. Let's go to Joan Marie in Smallwood. Okay, Joan Marie, you're on. Joan Marie, are you there? Whoops, I don't know what happened. Joan Marie, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Okay, now.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you first for giving me a voice. I'm not a famous person. I'm a housewife in Smallwood, a lifelong New Yorker. I'm glad you raised that thing. Today is Three Kings Day. Mario Cuomo was a good, honest man. And when he was at the helm, there was such a sense of security. There's a joy in that such a person was. And that's my simple comment. Thank you for giving me a voice.
Well,
bye-bye.
Joan Marie, that was a terrific voice. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You know, what I loved about Mario the most, of course, was the ability to both be deadly serious and really serious, and to teach and to do what he had to do. But also, what I loved about him was his humor. I mean, he had a fantastic sense of humor, and he could tell stories like nobody else. There's a single story, of course, that everybody here listens to over and over again because we've played it so many times. But before we do, let's go to Carolyn in Sharon, Connecticut. Okay, Caroline, you're on.
I listened to the show so many times over the years, but what really stands out in my mind is the Notre Dame speech.
Yep.
Here is a man who is a devout Catholic, where abortion is considered wrong, and yet he had the intelligence, the wisdom, the democratic principles to know that his choice would not be everyone else's, and that people, women in particular, really have a right to decide, make decisions about their own bodies. And the fact that he was anti-abortion and yet let other people be, will, you know, other people able to get one if they needed or felt that they should have it, I thought that was just incredible.
Yeah. You know, my comment on that is that Mario Cuomo was a very religious man. But he wasn't going to let anybody push him around on his view of what Christianity, of what Catholicism was. And, you know, he put up with a lot of garbage. There was one guy down, a cleric down in the Hudson Valley, and one of the newspapers ran, one of the usual suspect tabloids, quote, "You'll roast in hell forever," because of his views on that.
Terrible.
But, you know, if you have a sense of self, which he did, then it all comes to you. It is a remarkable man that he was.
And a sense of right and wrong.
Yeah.
And I only wish that some of the other people we have in government who are personally against abortion would understand that this is not a religious state where one religion dictates all the rules, and that they should give other people the right to make their own decisions.
And that was his point. That's exactly what his point was. So
brilliant, wonderful, and I know at the time very controversial, and you know, as a pro-choice person, I thought it was simply wonderful that he did that.
Yeah, extraordinary. Is it Carolyn or Caroline?
It's Caroline.
Caroline, thank you so much for your wonderful call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering weekend and week-long workshops for adults and teens in a farm setting. Registration now open for 2015 classes. Snowfarm.org. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
Not like when people stand around the bed and look down at the gray, tired last stages and shake their heads at the pain and the sadness. She's dying the way most of us do. Every day, giving up a little more. All the signs are there. The white hairs at her chin. The way her back leg gives out when she tries to get up quickly. The way she follows slowly behind me when I let her out in the morning, instead of jumping and twisting and barking the way she used to. I began to notice it about a year ago, and now I notice it every time I look at her. I'm always reminding myself how old she is, nearly 80 now, by our measure. It was 1977 when Chris found her in the rain, homeless, soaked, apparently beaten and discarded. I don't like to think of her now in gray, tired, last stages, deteriorating uselessly with us looking down at her, shaking our heads at her pain and sadness. I wouldn't want to go that way. I keep telling myself I want to die sliding home in a cloud of dust, or just after my hook shot hits the cords and wins it for us by a basket. Dylan Thomas was right. I don't want to go gentle into that good night, and I wish Ginger wouldn't either. I wish she would go out with a last great dash, running and jumping and raging against the dying of the light. That's the way I'd like to see her. But seeing her as I do, it makes me remember so much. I remember all the good times, the long walks, running through Cunningham Park in Queens with her chasing rabbits and barking at the tennis players and sitting next to me when I collapsed exhausted and lay with the early morning sun in my face, she ever watchful over me, looking at the wide open world around her and me, enjoying her aloneness with me as much as I did. I remember how she loved playing with little Christopher, wrestling with him, snapping at him, rolling over and over, and then her back legs lifting her rear end high, front legs extended straight out in front of her, tail wagging joyously, barking at him, challenging him to try to catch her. I remember how she enjoyed the big family holiday meals. She still perks up when she sees the cook preparing lamb shanks, knowing that there will be a big, juicy bone for her before long. I remember it all. But remembering it makes me notice more that she enjoys all of it less now. And it makes me wonder whether we did enough with all the moments that are now forever gone. Ginger's been here with us at the mansion alone for a long time. Ever since the mansion gate was locked behind her 5 years ago, she's lived with only the rabbits and birds and a couple of cats and us for friends. She had her maid and her litter when she was young, before we came to the mansion. But since then, for the most part, she's had to make her way without the kind of warmth from her own kind that the rest of the world seems to cherish. I didn't used to think about it much, but I do now. Maybe, frankly, we've not been fair to her. Maybe she should have been out more, gotten around more, been let loose more. And I think now about all the times I was hard on her, scolded her, ordered her away, sounding as angry as I could, watching her slinking out of the room, ears down, head sunken, wondering whether she'd ever be loved again. It hurts me to remember. I touch her now when I do. I scratch her behind her ear. I pat her head. Ginger's dying. We still walk together once in a while, but she spends a lot of time now laying at my feet, sleeping or resting, wanting little else. I've tried reading Dylan Thomas to her, but she grows every day, a little grayer, a little slower, every day forcing me more to remember and to regret.
My friend Rob from New Paltz wrote a Facebook thing in which he said, just heard Ginger on the radio. This was the other day when we played it. And I cried like a baby. Well, you know, it's pretty interesting if you listen to it real carefully. You had a sense of how people go, how dogs go. Interesting stuff. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Doug in Albany. Okay, Doug, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I'd like to relate a couple of stories with the governor. I mean, the original Governor Cuomo was a real giant to the left. You know, he was, and he was also a government reformer. Like, you know, government had a purpose. You know, the purpose was to provide services to the people, and that there was nothing wrong with that. That if people needed services, that was the role of the government, and that we needed professionals to do it, and that there's nothing bad about that. And it was a real civic responsibility and duty to provide high-quality services to the people. My story back, I started state government back in the 1980s, 1983 or something. I was a budget fellow. And it was the first time the governor had a budget that he thought was really his. So he came down to congratulate the people in the budget division. And so we're in a reception there. And so I see the governor for the first time in my 20-something. I seen the governor. I said, "Oh my God, the governor!" So I run up to the governor. I shook his hand. I said, "Doug Williams, Health and Social Development." You know, right? After that was over, I said, "Oh man, that was a miserable failure." I said, "Geez, I gotta, you know." So I'm wandering around the reception. About a half an hour later, I go back up to him. I shook his hand again. I said, "I'm Doug Williams. I'm a low-level functionary in your budget division." He looks at me and points at me. He says, "That's the second time you shook my hand." He says, "Keep that up, and you won't be low level for too long."
That's what he was. He was hysterical.
Yep, he was a great guy. Yeah. Really good guy.
Okay. Well, Doug, thanks for that wonderful call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It.
Yeah. All right. Have a great day.
Yeah, let's go to Donnie in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Donnie, you're on.
Hi, Alan. It's Bonnie.
Oh, Bonnie. Hi, Bon.
Hi, Alan. Well, I just want to tell you this story of way back when. Governor Cuomo was a beginning lawyer fighting for the people. Andrew said in Corona, it was at the very edge of Corona, Rego Park, and the people in Rego Park in the outer borough didn't want that housing to go up. And all of a sudden, I was visiting a friend, and I heard in those days a megaphone. And we went downstairs and we looked, and there's this guy in what was called a camel hair coat with a real hat, talking to all these poor people, and he said, "We're going to get housing here." And everybody thought, "Well, what is he talking about? What is he going to do?" And he managed to work out something that nobody ever thought, because the lower middle class people who were there did not want housing. They wanted this big playground, and he was like, go back to the 19th, the great compromiser. He got housing and a playground, and he got people who were so afraid of having poor people come in. But it was so strange. We had never seen anybody like this come into this area. He was so eloquent. There were no publicity around him. There were no television cameras. There was just this incredibly eloquent man in the middle of all these poor non-white people talking and saying, "You're going to get housing." So that's my first memory of this man, the very first time I heard the name Cuomo.
Bonnie, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Love your story as always. Thanks, baby.
Bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I listened to Andrew Cuomo's eulogy, and it was absolutely beautiful and remarkable in so many ways. And I am grateful for all that, for all that Mario did. And thank you. That's all I want to say.
Okay, Abigail. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Okay. So how about the other classic, Papa? And it's Papa, it's 66586.
Tired, very tired, feeling the many months of struggle. Last night I went up to the den to make some notes. I was looking for a pencil, rummaging through some papers in the back of my desk drawer where things accumulate for years, when I turned up one of Papa's old business cards, the ones we made up for him that he was so proud of. Andrea Cuomo. Italian-American groceries, fine imported products. That was the card. Papa, frankly, never had any occasion to give anyone a calling card, but he loved having them around. He put one in a little gold frame on a red velvet background on the nightstand near his bed. Mama has one of them now, framed like Papa's, on display in a prominent place in her old china closet. I couldn't help wondering what Papa would have said if I had told him I was tired, or God forbid that I was discouraged. Then I thought for a few minutes about how he dealt with hard circumstances. 1,000 different pictures flashed through my mind. He was so used to dealing with hard circumstances. Almost everything he had to do was hard. But one scene in particular came sharply into view. We had just moved from South Jamaica into Hollis Wood. We had left the place behind the store and for the first time had our own house. It even had some land around it, even some trees. One in particular was a great blue spruce that must have been 40 feet high. It was beautiful. Hollis Wood was hilly. Our house sat 10 or 15 feet above the road itself, and the blue spruce stood majestically like a sentinel at the corner of our property where the street made a turn, bending around our property line. Less than a week after we moved in, there was a terrible storm. We came home from the store that night to find the great blue spruce pulled almost totally out of the ground and flung forward, its mighty nose bent in the asphalt of the street. My brother Frankie and I knew nothing about trees. We could climb poles all day. We were great at fire escapes. We could scale fences with barbed wire at the top, but we knew nothing about trees. When we saw our spruce defeated, its cheek on the canvas, our hearts sank. But not Papa's. We stood in the street looking down at the tree. The rain was falling. We waited a couple of minutes figuring things out, and then Papa announced, "Okay, we're going to push him up." "What are you talking about, Papa? The roots are out of the ground." "Shut up. We're going to push him up. He's going to grow again." We didn't know what to say to him. You couldn't say no to him, not just because you were his son, but because he was so sure. So we followed him into the house and we got what rope there was and we tied the rope around the tip of the tree that lay in the asphalt, and he stood up by the house with me pulling on the rope and Frankie in the street in the rain helping to push up the great blue spruce. In no time at all, we had it standing up straight again. With the rain now falling even harder, Papa dug away at the place where the roots were, making a muddy hole wider and wider as the tree sank lower and lower towards security. Then we shoveled mud over the roots and moved boulders to the base of the tree to keep it in place. Papa drove stakes into the ground, tied rope from the trunk to the stakes, and maybe 2 hours later, soaked, we looked at the spruce, the crippled spruce made straight by ropes, and said, "Good Papa, don't worry, he's gonna grow again." I looked at the card and I wanted to cry. If you were to drive past the house today in Holliswood, you would see that great, straight blue spruce, maybe now 60 feet tall, pointing straight up to the heavens, pretending it never had its nose in the asphalt. I put Papa's card back in the drawer. I closed it with a vengeance. I couldn't wait to get back into the campaign.
And there you heard it. Let's go to Estelle in Slingerlands. All right, Estelle, you're on.
Hi, everybody. This is a story about Mario playing stickball as a boy in Queens. We had an annual stickball game in Del Mar, New York, years ago. And so my husband wanted these suburban kids to know what life was like in Brooklyn years ago, which was very much like the Queens of Cuomo's. So there was a we sent him a letter, an invitation, and he had to decline. But I carried his diaries. I had bought a copy of his diaries talking about the campaign for governor and brought it to a reception at the Desmond years ago. And I showed him the invitation again, and he said, "Stickball, you know, in the suburbs." He said, what do you use for a, you must use the baseball bat." And I said, no, we really use a broomstick. And then he said, "Well, you must use a tennis ball." No, we really use the pink ball, that little rubber ball that, you know, the kids used in Brooklyn and Queens. And so then I opened the book. I hoped he would autograph it, and he wrote, "Estelle, thanks for asking. Hope you enjoy. Mario Cuomo, May 1984. That was absolutely delightful. So he was a great guy, absolutely.
Estelle, thanks for the great call. Appreciate
it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and now we're going to go to Arlen in Albany. Okay, Arlen, you're on.
Arlen? Hi, Alan, thank you.
Sure.
I remember Mario Cuomo's eloquence, but my memory really doesn't do him justice. When I hear you play these speeches and things,
mm-hmm.
I remember that when I was first beginning to listen to WAMC in the early 1980s, I loved to listen to the radio show that you had with the governor. And it seemed to me, at least personally, that really helped the station itself build itself into, or helped you build the radio station into what it is today. Do you see it that way, too?
Oh, yeah. He was extraordinarily generous. Look, in my lifetime, I have gotten to know two guys, Pete Seeger and Mario Cuomo. Both of them have been so generous to this radio station. Now, do I feel that somehow, it was reciprocal? Yeah, I do. I think that a lot of people would not have known Mario, like you, were that show not on. So it was good for him. He was a very bright man. He knew that. But his generosity with us was unparalleled. And it really was extraordinary. We have and we will continue to give out tapes and other things. It takes money to run a radio station. You know that, Arlen.
Sure.
They have brought in thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. My bet is that we'll see that in this fund drive, too. And he was always very, very reasonable about that, very good about it, never wanted anything back. So it's true. If you want to have fun this weekend on Friday or on Saturday morning, the Capital Connection goes over some of those best of Mario stories. And I hope you'll join us. Okay, Arlen?
I will. I was sorry when he lost the governorship, and also sorry when the radio show was discontinued.
Well, we were on for a long time. I mean, I think something like 18 years. It really was a tremendous experience for me. And as I say, I was very grateful. Thanks, Arlen. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Vinny in Orville, Vermont. Okay, Vinny, you're on.
Hey, I was just remembering when Governor Cuomo was on WABC for a short time on Saturday morning.
That's right.
And I used to listen. I'm probably opposed to virtually everything he said, but just to pin down his point of view, a caller called in and expressed their dissatisfaction with the status of immigration, U.S. immigration policy, that he felt that immigrants were coming in and, you know, essentially legally and illegally and taking a free ride here, particularly illegally. And Governor Cuomo dressed them down and said, you know what? He said, immigrants, legal and illegal, are entitled to everything that we're entitled to, the bounty of America, he called it. He said, because the United States of America has been stealing, essentially, that bounty from the rest of the world for 200 years. And you know what? I think he honestly believed that, but I don't think he believed in American exceptionalism in the sense that he didn't believe that America got where it was because of individual liberty and freedom, as the founders set it forth.
Well, you know,
slavery in the camp. He believed essentially that we exploited the rest of the world. And I believe he's right in line with the current president, who stated in 2003 on Chicago NPR equivalent that the vision of the founding fathers was fundamentally flawed because the vision of the founding fathers didn't address wealth redistribution. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think he was a good man, and he honestly believed that. But I just, you know, someone once suggested, how can two people look at this and come to it?
Exactly. Exactly. Vinny,
you know what the guy said, by the way, just quickly?
Yeah.
He said it's genetic. I laughed, but the more I think about it, the more credibility I give it.
Vinny, thank you very much for your call.
God bless his soul. I do believe he was a good man. I just
he was.
Disagree with everything he ever said. Virtually.
Thanks a lot. Oh, we've got a Myrna in Poughkeepsie, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Myrna.
Yes, I just was remembering an interview that you did with Mario on the regular show you used to interview him on.
Indeed.
And you asked him, you were talking about, the penalty,
Death penalty.
Thank you, death penalty.
Yes.
Don't get old.
I am.
And you asked him if his daughter had been raped, would he want the death penalty? And he said, I might want it, but that doesn't mean it was right.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that, and I've used that a million times in my own ideas. Thinking about, do I want it, but does that mean it's right?
I think he said at the time, if this is the same conversation, because we had many of them,
right.
He would want to grab a baseball bat, you know,
right,
and take it to the guy, but that wasn't the way we did it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's a great memory, Myrna. Thank you so much for
You're
calling.
Welcome.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Okay. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com. Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley. Raise your glass, HudsonWineMerchants.com. And Ashokan Center, retreats, conferences, family celebrations, and school programs. A classroom in the wild, ashokancenter.org.
One night in late October, when I was far from sober, returning with my load with manly pride, my feet began to stutter, so I lay down in the gutter. And a pig came near and lay down by my side. A lady passing by was heard to say, "You can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses." And the pig got up and slowly walked away.
Doesn't get any better. The guy was so good, so funny. Let's go to David in Boston Lake. Okay, David, you're on.
Alan, I just want to thank you for letting me and so many others get to know Mario Cuomo better through me and Mario. And one of the ways that it inspired me was with Mario Cuomo's conservation of the Adirondacks. I've worked for the Adirondacks for 28 years, and for the first 8 years he was governor. And every time I'd listen to me and Mario, I would think about the next occasion where he, where Governor Cuomo could help conserve the Adirondack Park. And one time in his last month in office, he was running for governor in September 94, mm-hmm. and he was behind in the polls. And he took the time to come to the Adirondacks and speak up in Lake George near Silver Bay to honor a guy named Paul Schaefer from Niskayuna, who was a great conservationist. And he gave Paul the award, but he took time out to say, why am I here in September 1994 fighting for my life here, in my fighting for a fourth term, and I come up to the Adirondacks where there are no votes for me. And every time there is a vote, And a potential Democratic voter reaches for the ballot, a palsy comes over his hand, and he can't quite reach for the Democratic lever. And the whole crowd broke up in laughter. But we knew the seriousness of it because he was behind in the polls, George Pataki, and we all fought for him and wanted him to win. But he took time out, 4 hours out of his day, to be in Silver Bay, New York. And that said a lot to me about who he is and the larger-than-life, you know, thinking about things that are larger than yourself. And that's what he taught all of us for years.
Indeed. Well, first of all, David, I want to thank you for everything you've done personally in this area. And it's a great story. And it does typify. It really gets to the guts of who the guy was. Thank you so much for making the call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Ellen in Kingston. All right, Ellen, you're on.
Hi. No, I just wanted to say that he was a great man, and he cared for this state. He tried his best for this state when the state was really in terrible shape. And we all got to know him better when he was on the radio with you. I think the thing that I enjoyed about him most was he had this wicked sense of humor. He could laugh at himself and everybody else. And he was just a great man. And that's really all I wanted to say.
You know, Ellen, you are so right about the sense of humor, laughing at himself and laughing at everybody else. We played the cut of Ginger the Dog. Did you hear that a little earlier? His remembrance? Well, one day he was on the air with me, and he said, "You know, Alan, I, you know, Shartak. He always called me Shartak. He said, "You know, Shartak," he said, "I told Ginger about you, and she said you're nothing but a fire hydrant with a necktie." It was one of my favorite moments. You're nothing but a fire hydrant with a necktie. I thought it was just part of what he did and said. You know, he said, when he was gone, somebody asked him what he wanted to be remembered for. He says, "I'll be remembered for the Shot Talk show we should." So, Ellen, thank you so much for the great call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll go to the mayor of Amsterdam. Mayor, are you there?
I am here. How are you, Alan?
I'm great. Mayor, identify yourself so everybody knows who you are.
This is Mayor Ann Thain. I'm with the city of Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share my story with you.
Sure.
My husband and I had purchased a home up here in Amsterdam before we actually moved here permanently. And we used to go back and forth every week. We'd live here 3 days a week and go back to New Jersey 4 days a week and on Sunday nights. And every Sunday night, I would look forward to the radio show with the governor and Alan Shartok. And honest to goodness, it is what got me interested in politics in New York State.
do you know, Mayor, how many people have told me that they used to schedule their ride home so that they could hear the show?
Absolutely. It was 2 hours of just wonderful repartee and humor, and he was a brilliant man, and the conversation was just so interesting, and I learned so much. So I thank you, and I thank Mario Cuomo. God bless him.
Well, yes, you know, it's so hard to see these lions go.
Pete, yeah.
For me, it's a double whammy this year. Pete Seeger and Mario Cuomo, and you know, how lucky does one guy get in life? That's me.
I know.
To have had, you know, the opportunity with both of these men, Pete giving us the story of his life, which have brought millions of dollars into WAMC, and Mario and his generosity of spirit and kindness and all the rest of it. So you're
well,
so,
Alan.
So
really, right. thank you for sharing that with all of us.
Well, believe me,
because it's been a wonderful run.
It's been a wonderful
run. You
know, I've
been thinking about it. I was in my early 30s when I started listening to you, so. This is a wonderful thing. So thank you so much.
Mayor, we love Amsterdam, and we're so pleased you called. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are very good, and I'd love to hear from you. You know what? I bet he would, too, wherever he is. Let's go to Mark in Poughkeepsie. Mark, you're on.
Ah, hello, hello. One thing I just wanted to share about the governor, I'm rather young to remember his governorship. I'm in my mid-30s, but when I was in fourth or fifth grade, I carried a blue Trapper Keeper binder, and I was flipping through Time magazine with my dad at the time, and I saw a picture of Mario Cuomo, and in the picture, he had the same blue Trapper Keeper binder. So my dad encouraged me to write a letter to the governor just about the Trapper Keeper and about how we shared the same good taste in binders. So I wrote the letter and I sent it off to him. Then a couple weeks later, I received a handwritten letter back from Governor Cuomo responding to the letter that I wrote him. And it wasn't something that had been typed up by his secretary. It was something that he took the time out of his day to write and sign and send back to me. So that is really my only... my only memory or recollection of Governor Cuomo, and I just wanted to call in and share. Rarely do I call into radio shows.
You know what? It's a great story because it is so Cuomo. You know, I would write these letters, these columns every week. I've been writing for 1,000 years, and he would get them, and he would circle something, and he put 2 explanation points next to it and say, boy, are you wrong. So you know, he took the time to do it. He was a guy who did it because he thought it was right. He didn't do it because there's certain other governors, and I'm not going into who they were, but, you know, it was all the prestige. It was the people bowing down. Not this guy. This guy was a religious person who believed in sharing and doing, and that's what made him so special. And the fact that he wrote that letter to you, Mark, I think is a perfect example of that. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you think so, and thanks for having me.
I do indeed. Thanks, Mark.
Have a good one.
Okay, and now we'll go to Holland in Colebrook, New York. Okay, go ahead, Holland. You're on.
Yeah, it's Russ is the name, Alan.
Russ,
I appreciate
I'm so sorry.
You taking the call. No problem. I just had an anecdote. I only met the governor one time. He came to Utica, where we had started a Center for Kids with Disabilities, where we were matching them up with assistive technology so that they could participate more fully. And his whole entourage came, and there was all this preparation, and he came in, and we knew it was a great photo op, and of course we were interested in some funding. And I'll never forget, he walked in, and he saw what was going on, and he turned around and asked the press and all the rest of the entourage to leave. And he sat down on the floor with the kids with their battery-operated toys and played for a good 15 minutes, got up and said, thank you very much, and walked out. And it was just tremendously significant in terms of, you know, my getting a sense of who this man was.
That's a great story. Thank you so much, Russ. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Yep. We'll go to Pete in Glenville. Pete, you're on.
Hello.
Hi,
hello,
Pete. You're on.
Alan?
Yep.
Thanks very much for taking my call, and thank you very much for doing this program. It's wonderful.
I'm so glad.
My uncle taught at Providence College. He was a Dominican priest, and he was, I think, Mario's biggest booster in New England. He wrote several times to him to try to talk him into running for the presidency, and also to discuss certain politics and religion and principles. And by the end of it, 3 or 4 letters back and forth, my uncle said, well, you don't have to respond to this letter. I just thank you for allowing me to send you this in your time. And now, Mario sent back a letter and said, you don't think for a minute that John Mahoney, an Irishman, is going to get the last word over in Italian, Mario Cuomo. And he finished up just making some gentle fun of himself. And years later, my uncle passed away. I sent the letter to Mr. Cuomo when he was out of office and working for the law firm. Yeah. And I said that he had passed away. He was your biggest booster in New England. And it would be a kindness if you could send a letter of condolence to my aunt, who grieved him tremendously. She was a Dominican nun, and he did respond within a couple of days. And my aunt wondered, how did he know? And I said, well, the word gets around. But they're just some very, very simple acts of kindness that spoke so much of the man. A wonderful person, wonderful person. I grieved, and we all grieved when he passed.
That's who he was. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it very much. Okay, we'll go to Joan in Balsam Lake. Joan, you're on. Joan, you're on. Well, I think Joan is on number two, or she was on number two. Joan, are you there? No, Joan is not there. But she asked the question, why not the Supreme Court? He felt, and he told me, that Clinton would not appoint him to the Supreme Court, so he took himself out. George Stephanopoulos wrote a book in which he said it was all set. Mario didn't believe it, and Mario sent him a letter saying, please take me out of contention. And that's the way that went. Okay, so that takes that care of that. Let's go to Kurt in Nassau. Kurt.
Hi, your story about Ginger and the lamb shanks.
Yep.
I was one of those guys who was a chef at the governor's mansion cooking those lamb shanks.
No kidding.
So that definitely is true. The governor loved lamb shanks. That was one of his favorite meals. And my recollections, he was just the nicest man. He would come in when things were quiet. He'd come in the kitchen, he'd talk. And now at that time, I was in my 20s. He came up to me. He said, what do you think about the abortion question? And I was absolutely floored that he would, turn to me and ask a question like that. And we had a little conversation, but just a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been some time in the mansion.
That's
really where he lived.
That's right.
Unlike everybody else, the Pataki's who came up by helicopter every day, or the other guys, Rockefeller in New York City.
Well, the old folks remembered the Rockefeller years, and they loved it because they worked like 2 days a week.
But when
the Careys came and then the Cuomos, it was a full-time living house. And the other thing is, I listened to WAMC in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And at that time, Lertzema was on in the morning, and
indeed,
he had the birds.
Yep.
And he would come in, the governor would come in, he'd say, what are those birds? What's the crazy birds? And I'd say, oh, it's WAMC. And believe it or not, he'd say, oh, that's Char Talk Station. So, yeah, he was a really down-to-earth special guy.
He was. Thanks for the great call,
Thank
Kurt.
You.
Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Josephine in Rhinebeck. Josephine, you're on.
Yes, one of the things I remember about the Mario and Me broadcast,
right,
there were so many, but this one always tickled me. If Alan said something and Mario obviously disagreed, rather than disagree, he would hesitate just a few seconds and then say, Oh, really?
That was his favorite. And I've used it 1,000 times. He used to say that to me all the time, Josephine. So, oh, really? I would do that with my kids. I would do that with Roselle. Oh, really? Say, oh, really, Chartal?
Oh, that always tickled me.
Yeah, and my favorite, of course, of all times was, Chartal, is that what you really think? I said, yes, Governor, it is. And he would say, who cares? So... So that was tremendous. And thank you for listening, and thank you for telling
And thank you for such a terrific program here with so many wonderful things about Mario. I think he was a very rare politician because he was an incorruptible politician.
He was. No question about it. You know, a lot of politicians are in it for whatever it can bring to them. I think I just sort of said that. But not this guy. This guy was in it because it was his mission. It was the right thing to do. In fact, I think he was scared to death of anybody trying to corrupt him. I believe he said to me once, when I'm walking into a room and somebody wants to hand me an envelope, with a message or a letter, I won't take it, because he was always afraid somebody would be trying to bribe him or give him something. So Josephine, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for the program. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Deirdre in Steventown, the only one in the world except that they stole the sign. Go ahead, Deirdre.
They did steal the sign.
They did steal the sign. I remember when they did it. And they haven't and they haven't replaced it after all these years. Yeah. What do you got?
I just wanted to thank you for this show and for all your coverage. My mom worked for Governor Cuomo from when he was Secretary of State through his governorship. She was part of his Albany office and started when she was living, we were living up in Plattsburgh and commuting back and forth, working 80-hour weeks. And one time I went for a visit and we're in his Redwood office and he let me sit at his chair and at his desk. And he said, "What would you do if you were governor?" And I probably embarrassed my mother by saying this, but I banged the gavel and I said, 3-day work week. And he laughed, and I got up, and he said, "Sorry about this, kid." And he sat down, and he banged the gavel. Veto, veto. I remember marching in the first Martin Luther King Jr. parade with him. He was just an exceptional man.
He was, and I'm so sorry I have to cut you off because we are now out of time. And
well, thank you very much.
And I thank you so much for calling, Deirdre.
Okay.
And I'm sorry about Margaret in Greenville because we can't get her call because we are out of time. Okay. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking legal separation and divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com and Vision Excel. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art. Facebook or Vision Excel. iCare.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop, everybody. Remember, the conversation always continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. For some reason, he's not wearing his hat today. Your calls were answered by Daniel Goldstein. He did a terrific job. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She is unbelievable. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.